Are these people really as contented and happy as they seem? I asked.
Yes, my companion replied, they are as happy as their natures will permit them to be. They have no perception of any higher or better life, and so feel no longings to attain to such a life. As soon as they are made to realize that there is a possibility of progress, an unwonted restlessness will seize them, and they will not long remain here. That young woman will presently find herself stifled by her present surroundings, and will be forced to seek a purer atmosphere. What class of people in earth life contribute to people this sphere? Those whose hearts are not inherently bad, but whose spiritual natures have not been developed, those who have lived selfish lives, finding in the gratification of the animal instincts and propensities their greatest, in fact their only pleasure. They are incredulous as to even the existence of a higher sphere than their own, because their spiritual perceptions have not yet been awakened.
What is their manner of living?
Very similar to that to which they were accustomed on earth. Good and evil impulses alike sway them by turns. They know no pleasures beyond those of the senses, and selfishness is the dominant feeling. They have their discords and contentions, their misunderstandings and their feuds, the same as on earth, and yet they will tell you, as they have done, that they are contented and happy. 46. It is this class of spirits that mortals have most to fear. Unscrupulous and almost conscienceless, they care not what trick they impose upon the credulous, what the consequences of their evil impulses. There is a constant effort on their part to gain the control of mediums for a gratification of propensities which is denied them in their present life. Oh, earthly mediums cannot be too careful to surround themselves with an atmosphere of personal purity, in order to render themselves unapproachable by the influence and control of such spirits as these. Still we descended. It became so dark that we had almost to grope our way, but here and there seemed to be beacon fires, which lit up the scene with a lurid glare. At last we reached a plain. The path seemed to lie narrow and uncertain between morasses on either hand. Here and the ditches, half filled with slime, were revealed in the fitful light of the fires. Forms as of strange, hideous creatures crouched here and there, and glared at us with flaming eyes and hungry faces. I shuddered and cowered, and drew closer to my companion, who walked confidently and fearlessly along the path, her radiant atmosphere gleaming out in the semi-darkness. The path seemed to stretch far ahead through a landscape whose dreary monotony was almost unbearable. Low clouds hung over our heads, and they, too, were lit up with fiery touches by the fires. Great bats flapped their wings and circled round and round overhead, and once the melancholy call of an owl fell upon my ear. Presently other strange cries and wails reached me, causing my blood to run cold with horror. Involuntarily I exclaimed, "Listen to the wails of lost souls."
"Truly, yes," responded my companion, "souls to whom were given the light of truth and the guide of conscience, and the knowledge of the spirit, but who willfully turned their backs upon them all, and thus forfeited heaven and happiness. Their souls are lost in this morass, while the darkness which envelops them prevents their finding the path again without great difficulty. 47. Here they must wander and struggle and wail and despair, until they willingly open their hearts to the truth, and reach out their hands for that help which will surely be given them when they sincerely desire it. Here and there were rudely constructed huts which seemed to serve the purposes of shelter for the wretched inhabitants of this sphere. In front of one of these sat a woman with disheveled hair and distorted countenance, wringing her hands, and now and then uttering fierce cries. My companion paused to speak with her.
"Will you tell me the cause of your distress?" she asked. At first the only reply was inarticulate raving, but presently the maniac, for so she seemed, became calmer, and with a confidence inspired by the sweet, pure face of the questioner, she wailed out, "I murdered my unborn babes one after another. I had not the excuse of shame which I wished to conceal. I was a fashionable woman, and I wanted my time to devote to society and my own amusement, and children would be in the way, so I murdered them, poor helpless things murdered by the one who should rather have sacrificed her life to protect them. Oh, I am a murderess!" she fairly shrieked. Sometimes their little innocent faces look down reproachfully out of the clouds, and then I go mad, mad, mad. And indeed she did, manifesting all the symptoms of the most violent form of insanity. Do you not comprehend one of the causes which peoples the lunatic asylums in the earth? It is sometimes a relief for these mad spirits to control a human form, and give way to their paroxysms through that organism. As humanity is elevated and made to recognize and obey the higher laws of its being, this sphere will have fewer inhabitants, and this form of insanity among humans become more rare. When they learn the sin of forcing an unwilling motherhood upon a woman who is neither spiritually nor affection ally prepared for the responsibility and the privilege, then will the cause of sin such as this woman has committed, be removed. No woman should become a mother until her desires go forth to meet and to welcome the duties and joys which belong to motherhood. 48. Do you ever call for your injured children to come to you? My companion asked the wretched woman. Call for them? How should I dare to do so? They would curse me. No, they would come to love and bless and help you. Oh, if I only thought so. If I only dared. And for a moment her ravings ceased in thoughtful silence. Learn to forget yourself and your own misery, and think of these little ones whom you might have loved and cherished. Learn to love them, and love will work wonders for you. A gleam of hope came into the despairing eyes, and we passed on, leaving her with that newborn hope to comfort her heart. When she calls for them in love, then those little ones will be brought to her, and will help to lead her out of this terrible place, was what my companion said to me. You leave a word of comfort with everyone, I remarked. That is my mission, she returned. Then other sounds fell upon my ears, and in the weird light we saw a man apparently beside himself with terror. His hand was outstretched as if to ward away something which menaced him, and though his face was half averted, his eyes seemed held as if by a spell, by the cause of his terror. Presently I distinguished what it was. A huge serpent lay coiled at his feet, as if about to spring upon him, its tongue protruding and its fiery eyes gleaming upon him and holding him in spite of his will. Lizards crawled over his feet, and rats and all sorts of noisome creatures ran or crept hither and thither about him, but these lesser annoyances were for the instant forgotten in the greater fear which paralyzed him. 49. After a time the serpent, as if its purpose had changed, slowly uncoiled itself and crept away, and then these inarticulate utterances which had at first attracted our attention took the form of words, and the man prayed and cursed almost in the same breath. At one moment he defied the hideous creatures which surrounded him, and bid them do their worst, at the next he begged to be delivered from them. This is the drunkard's hell, said my companion, a hell which begins even upon earth. This man gave himself up to the slavery of drink, he destroyed his own prospects in life, begat children upon whom the curse is perpetuated, impoverished his family, seduced his friends to a like destruction, broke his wife's heart, and at last died of delirium tremens. He has brought himself to his present condition, and here he must remain until he feels remorse, not for the consequences of his sins, but for the sins themselves. Presently we came to another man sitting silent and bent, and with his hands pressed to his breast. Behold, said my companion, a victim of remorse. It burns in his bosom night and day like a perpetual fire, and yet it does not help to lift him out of his present condition, because he will not even admit to his heart a full sense of his guilt, but is continually justifying and finding excuses for himself. What was this man's sin? I queried. He won the love of an innocent girl, and through that love, which was yielded entirely and confidingly to him, he dragged her down to her destruction, even glorying in the shame he brought upon her. She in her turn became desperate, and sank to as great a depth of degradation as he, revenging herself upon his sex by luring as many as possible to their destruction. But her sins fall in great measure upon him, and he still refuses to recognize that. With head still bowed he had not yet perceived our presence. Presently he exclaimed, as if the words were wrung from him by inward agony. Oh, it burns! It burns! It is burning my heart out. Will this inward fire never cease? My God! How can I endure it longer? 50 Yet I am sure I was no worse than the rest. If they were justified, why was not I? Then my companion spoke. Because to you are given greater and clearer powers of spiritual discernment, but you scorned the gifts and made no use of them. Then something happened which filled me with wonder. The man looked up as the words fell upon his ear and a strange terror seized him, and he shrank back and cowered as if in fear. Who are you? He at length found voice to ask. Mary, is it truly you, or has my punishment taken on a new form, and is this strange illusion to haunt me in the future, to be a perpetual reminder of that which I would forget? Robert, it is I, was the reply given in the lowest and sweetest of accents. It is false. He shrieked, springing to his feet. It is only an illusion from which I will escape. Mary is here somewhere in this valley of the shadow of death. Why should she not be when I am here? A wicked woman is worse and more degraded than a wicked man, all know that, and I once saw her here when I first came, when she came to reproach me for her misery, and to taunt me with my own. Robert, it is indeed I, again replied the sweet low voice. I was here, but I am here no longer. I have found a better way, a better place. Robert, I loved you once, I love you still. Let the past be blotted out between us, and let me lead you up to the light. She held out her arms to him, and the man, sinking to his knees, clung to her skirts and sobbed like a child. For the first time in all his earthly and spiritual life his heart was touched and softened, and then I saw a strange thing occur. I seemed to see the fire within his bosom, and his tears descend and extinguish it, and encircled by the arms of the woman he had so grievously wronged, he felt peace and rest. 51 Will you come with me? The white-robed ministering angel said to this man who was stained with foulness from his vile dwelling place, and though she clasped him in her arms, her garments received no stain. Not yet, oh, Mary, not yet. I am not worthy. But I will make myself worthy. I turned away and left them alone, unwilling to profane the sacredness of their interviews by my presence. The kiss she imprinted upon his forehead when at last she found it necessary to leave him, he seemed to receive as a benediction. Robert, remember we belong to one another, were her parting words. I would not break the spell which seemed to be upon my companion by any words of idle questioning, as eager as was my curiosity. After a time she herself spoke. As she turned her face towards me it seemed transfigured with a celestial light. There was a radiant smile upon her lips, though tears stood in her eyes. You do not understand it? No, it is all a mystery. It is true. I am the woman whom that poor wretch betrayed. I once found an abiding place in his death and terror-shadowed valley, and have progressed to my present position only by terrible and prolonged self-conflicts. You wonder why I am sent back as a messenger. A guide in such a land as this should know it well. And I do know it, alas, too well. I know the outward terrors of these wretched people, and their inward sufferings and struggles, and I know the path which leads out of their present condition, because I myself have travelled it. It is part of the atonement I must make for the sins committed in the past. The obligation to come here will be removed only when I have helped to undo as much evil as I helped to create in the world. Oh! No one can measure the consequences of his evil acts until he enters the spirit world. My garments were once as foul and stained as any of these, but see, they are white now, she exclaimed joyously. As I looked at her, the luminous atmosphere which still surrounded her seemed to dart out rays of living light. Does it not make you very wretched? I asked, to come here so continually and witness so much misery? It did at first, was the reply, but now I feel that no more. The sight of it all only calls forth my fullest sympathies, and gives me power and will to work. Now I can look beyond, and see all these lost souls redeemed and purified, and walking in the light of perfect day. In a little while they shall sing a new song, and this knowledge takes away the pain. My mission for today is ended, she continued, but I have one more place to show you. Presently we came to a sort of parapet, from which we looked down into what at first seemed unknown and unfathomable depths, so impenetrable was the darkness which overshadowed it. But after a time my vision became strengthened so that I began dimly to perceive what was before or rather beneath us. I saw here and there a figure walking about with a sort of uncertain movement, as one might walk in a dream or in utter darkness. Some of them stumbled, others stretched out their hands as if to feel their way. But far more than were walking were sitting or crouching immovable, as though they were hewn of stone. There was no sound of voices, no shrieks, no wails, no curses. The silence was profound and oppressive, and was only broken by an occasional sigh or moan, as one sometimes moans in sleep, which low as it was, smote on the ear with terrible distinctness. What did it mean? My companion divined my inward questioning, and replied, "These are inner spirit lethargy, a soul sleep, which has bound many of them for years, and which may bind them for years to come. Their spiritual natures are wholly dormant, and being taken from the material world, where alone their energies found activity, they have necessarily fallen into their present state. These souls are, so to speak, yet in embryo, and have not been born into spirit life." 53. From what classes of mortals come these inhabitants of this land of sleep and death? Those who know nothing whatever of spiritual life while on earth. Those in whose hearts were no high aspirations, no sense of purity and goodness, and who mocked at the very words. Those who by vicious lives have murdered the spirituality within them. Those who allowed their souls and their intellects to be fettered by superstitions, and followed blindly the leading of others. Those who lived wholly for self, refusing to recognize the grander meanings and purposes of life. In the sphere we have just left, the spiritual perceptions were not gilded, only perverted or put aside. Here they have either never been developed, or else have been so nearly destroyed that only the germ remains. That can never perish, and will someday, perhaps in the far future, be developed into active life. Why do we not descend and seek to awaken them to a sense of their needs, and the methods to attain to spiritual growth and development? We cannot go to them. They are shut off from all communication from those above them. As they have wholly missed the lesson which the earth life had for them, they must go back to the earth to get their first glimmerings of light and knowledge. Those whom you see moving about are beginning to feel the awakening of the faint spiritual life. They will be attracted, without knowing how or why themselves, back to earth, and will then painfully and laboriously learn that which they failed to learn before. But if they were to look upward, could they not see us? Could we not beckon to them, and so awaken them to a knowledge of something better than their present condition, and to a desire to attain to it? No, as their spiritual senses are dulled, their eyes are blinded to all things spiritual. They cannot see us. They could not hear our voices. 54. We can only communicate with them by the means of earthly organisms. Sometimes, at the stances held on earth, one of these benighted spirits finds his way thither, and by listening to words uttered through mediums, for the first time becomes conscious of the existence of a higher spiritual life. From that hour dates his spiritual progress. But, oh! His way is a long and weary one. If mortals could only realize it, how anxious they would be to avoid traveling it themselves, how zealous to help others. Sadly, we retraced our steps to the brighter world above, the experiences of the day being yet all too much for me to fully comprehend. Again I exclaimed, how much there is to learn. Yes, eternity leads us along a path of perpetual knowledge. When we have reached the end, we shall stand on an equality with God. My companion at parting said to me, "There is yet one sphere which we have not visited, but you have surely seen enough for today. I perceive that in the near future you will be conducted thither without my companionship. My work does not call me there." "Is it not a still lower sphere?" I asked in consternation. "No, it ranges above those we have visited. It stands almost on an equality with this, only this is the summer land, and that is the domain of winter." 55. Chapter 6. Work, Device, Knowledge and Wisdom. What a sense of freedom had come into my life. There were no petty, binding cares to keep me in bondage, there were as yet no duties to hold me in their inflexible grasp. I was free to go whither I would, and free and eager to learn. Although I had been permitted a visit to the nether spheres, and had acquired some knowledge of their inhabitants and their spiritual conditions, I felt that I had yet everything to learn about my own. I had met many spirits, and they were so kind and cordial that already a genuine friendship was beginning to dawn in my heart for more than one, a friendship which was not to be limited or modified by the vicissitudes and limitations of time, but which was to go on strengthening to all eternity. One fact impressed itself upon me: while none seemed in haste, all were busy. There was no restlessness, no hurry, but each gave the impression of having definite duties which were not onerous but pleasurable. Hitherto I had been for the most part so occupied with myself and my own personal happenings, that I had hardly found place in my mind for other than a merely superficial curiosity. But now the question began to come home to me, as something which it was not only my right but my duty to ask, so that I might be preparing myself to make my own choice of work when this sweet hour of rest had ended, and I had become sufficiently strong in spirit to find labor a pleasure instead of a task. 56 My two boys who shared my home, our home, were my almost constant companions, and often my instructors. How strange, and yet how natural it seemed to turn to their sweet, innocent faces and gather from their lips the heavenly wisdom which they had been garnering for years, while I was still troubled about things of earth. Margaret, too, was my frequent visitor, but she had duties which called her away from me at times, and I the more willingly departed from her because I knew that a portion of these duties at least lay with the loved ones I had left behind. Sometimes my boys and I visited the old familiar place, but there was quite as much sadness as pleasure in the visit, for not yet could I make my presence felt, not yet communicate with those I loved. "Mother," said my boys to me, "we will take you now to show you what our neighbors are doing." Then we set out. Our first visit was to a studio where an artist sat at work upon a masterpiece. How the colors glowed beneath his touch! How, as they were blended, they took the form almost of reality, and the picture, the creation of his genius, seemed, not a combination of canvas and pigments, but an actuality. I had the artist soul within me, but the circumstances of my life had denied it expression. Amid the manifold duties of my earthly existence there had been no time nor opportunity for artistic effort, but everyone can cultivate his or her taste. I had done this until I knew and could appreciate a good picture, and find in it a rare spiritual delight. But how crude all earthly efforts seemed when I looked upon the wonder before me. I stood spellbound, reveling in an enjoyment which I had never known before. The artist did not interrupt me for a time, but permitted me to enjoy my transports in silence. At last he spoke, "You are seeing but half. Would you like to see the other half?" 57 I looked at him in wonder. What was there to see more? At that moment the present scene faded instantaneously away, and I could look into an earthly studio, and into the mind and soul of the artist occupant. A strange thing I saw there. I saw that he had caught a spiritual vision of the beautiful picture which I had just examined, and this vision so enchanted him that he needs must himself try to paint it. So with unwonted haste and fervor he was tracing the outlines upon the canvas before him. "What does it mean?" I asked. "It means," replied the artist, "that every picture of genuine merit on earth is the faint copy of a spiritual reality. The artist sees the picture before he paints it, and if you question him he will tell you that his own achievement falls far short of the excellences which were presented to his spiritual vision. They call this gift genius on earth," he added with a smile. At our next visit we found a poet busy with his pen. On earth he had made himself a name, but his spirit utterances were far grander, far more sublime. Then his inspiration came from the sphere nearest the earth. Now it descended from the spheres above. The page seemed to glow with the luminousness of his thought. Again the earth vision opened up to me, and again I beheld the earthly shadows of the spiritual reality. A woman was busy at some womanly task, and as she worked, Fragmentary lines of poetry came into her mind. At first she disregarded them, but they seemed to insist upon being recorded, and so finally, almost sighing at the trouble they gave her, she wrote them down. Then other lines followed, and these, too, she penned in accordance with the resistless impulse which controlled her, and so she wrote on from time to time, not knowing wherefore or what she was writing, until at last a poem began to shape itself, and she perceived its meaning. When the poem was nearly completed, the inspiration left her, and she was compelled to finish it, and by means of her own dulled intellect supply the missing lines. The poem was not the same as that produced by the spirit writer, but identical in idea and sentiment, though having been filtered, as it were, through the medium of her weaker, more earthly intelligence, it was feebler in character, and lacked the loftier expression and purer sentiment. 58. Is this the way our poets write? I asked in wonder. All true poetry is an inspiration from the higher spheres, was the reply. Passing on, we paused where an author sat in the midst of a group to whom he was reading a tale he had just written. It was grand in conception and noble in execution, narrating the trials and disciplines of the spirit. As he read, the listeners were thrilled, and catching the inspiration of the writer, felt themselves uplifted to a higher spiritual plane. Again my attention was directed to earth, and to my surprise I found there were listeners there also, listeners whose spiritual ears, dulled by the interposition of the material veil, caught not the details of the story, nor even its full beauties, but only a faint impression of its grandeur and truth. They did not know that they were listening, but thought it was the spirit within them moved to this wondrous play of fancy, and forthwith they sat down to write, and each produced a tale, colored and shaped by his or her own experiences, impressions, prejudices and capabilities, yet all bearing the same faint resemblance to the wonderful spirit story, the spiritual lessons of the one being transferred into earthly lessons by the many. Truly this is wonderful, said I, addressing one of the group, for here we have no need to wait for introductions, but soul recognizes soul, and may freely interchange thought without those safeguards of guarantees by mutual acquaintances, which are found necessary on earth. Is there, then, no such thing as originality among mortals? No, was the reply. Earth is only the reflex of the spirit world. We passed on and came to a place where spirits of high intelligence, who had interested themselves with science on earth, and who were the eager to wrest from nature her deepest secrets, even still true to these instincts, and with enhanced opportunities, were acquainting themselves with the operations of material and spiritual laws, and experimenting with the results. 59. Now, behold again the earthly shadow. Many men felt their influence as it descended to earth, and the minds of many were turned in like directions, and I was impressed with the knowledge that speedily there would be the announcement of a new discovery or invention upon the earth, and that more than one man would claim the credit of it. Do not such things happen often? I found others, men and women, whose minds were less of a scientific and more of a philanthropic cast, conferring together how best they could help mortals and spirits in the lower spheres, and their work did not stop with themselves, but its influence extended to the earth, and was the motive power of many good endeavors, and many of seeming good to those who were engaged in them, but which, when viewed from the standpoint of the spirit world, were perceived to be utterly valueless, for the spirits can only perform through mortals that work which the latter are capable of doing. If they are ignorant, and with distorted senses of right and wrong, then the spirit influence, which might result in so much good, is seemingly wasted, for their efforts will be turned in useless or wrong channels. Would you see still more of this subtle spirit influence which is exerted over mankind? I assented, and was taken to earth where an orator was holding an audience spellbound by the eloquence of his words. But I, with my spiritual vision, beheld behind him the inspirer of his utterances, a spirit who seemed to hold him in his control, and not only whispered the words to his mind, but held his whole being as it under a spell.